So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right!
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Caroline Hyde and Ed Ludlow.
I'm Caroline Hyde at Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology.
Coming up, full earnings coverage ahead. We've got Cisco, it's sliding. As analysts dub its outlook conservative. We'll hear from the CFO.
Plus, we dig into Walmart's results as the commerce giant posts a big jump in its online business.
And we'll be sitting down with the CEO of hot AI search startup Perplexity to discuss growing competition in the search space and a new set of board advisors. And the here and the now is to dig in to investor sentiment more broadly. We can do that across geographies, across industry groups, but really to really tackle these record highs, we're with Principal Asset Management Chief Global Strategist Seema Shah joining us. And look, I mean, game on today from a macro perspective, and will it carry on into the tech outperformance, do you think?
Hi, great to be on with you. Look, it's a good risk on day. I think there's fundamental reasons for that. You know, of course, there's a discussion about rate cuts coming back onto the agenda. But I think more fundamentally, we can see that from the economic data, it's slowing. But we're not talking about a weak economy as yet, at least. So this is still a fundamentally strong economy, which means that earnings should be fairly solid as we go through the year. And that should translate into a broadening of the rally, which is why we're seeing so many of the indices reach record highs.
Seema, hey, it's Ed in San Francisco. I've been looking at all the index level energy so far year to date, right? And you look at the NASDAQ 100, S&P 500, I can't believe we showed the Dow Jones Industrial Average at the top of this program today. But I think what I'm trying to find out is if there's any commonality in the direction of the market and strip out the Mag 7, because I know that that's top of mind for so many people. Is there something in common for this market, or is it still dominated by our view of those single technology names?
So I think those single tech names, they are clearly still dominating the market. They're driving a lot, but what you have seen from the most recent earnings season is that this good performance is spreading out to other parts of the economy. Other sectors have done pretty well. So if that can be maintained, and particularly if you do actually start adding in those rate cuts towards the latter part of the year, that will help the story, particularly for certain segments of the market. I mean, even if you just think about small caps, they need those rate cuts. But overall, this is a broad, good story. We still probably need to see a little bit more evidence in order to secure that perspective. But at least for now, the evidence that is coming in suggests that this isn't just a year for the Mag 7, but it's going to be a year for the broad equity market.
What about the valuations of, well, they're fewer than seven now when they're magnificent, but more broadly, let's call it chip stocks, let's call it the winning formula of Nvidia, of, well, Alphabet, even Apple getting some lift again now. Are those valuations out of whack?
It's interesting. I was traveling across the US last week, and I was with investors everywhere, and that was a question that still keeps coming up is, you know, do we think of this as overvalued? And is it time for a correction? So we would definitely push back on that. Yes, it's a little bit frothy, but do we make comparisons to the dot-com bubble? Absolutely not. These earnings are somewhat believable, maybe a little bit frothy, as I said, But there's actually something fundamental in those valuations, so it doesn't really concern us. Inevitably, with this kind of market, when there's so much good news priced in, there's always going to be risk of a bit of a pullback. But we look at the tech story as a long-term play, and from a long-term play, it's still one of our favorite areas of the market.
You talked about the good news that's priced in, Seema. I don't want to bring the mood down, but something we've been talking a lot about recently on the show is the relationship between the US and China, whether it's constructive or otherwise. Is that a headwind you're factoring in right now, particularly when you look at the technology sector?
So it is, inevitably, it's something that we do need to consider, especially when you're going into the presidential election where China is going to be top of the news as we get closer and closer to that point. So it is something that we consider, but I think it's very much on a single stock name basis, because there's some which are going to be particularly exposed and others which are not so much. The good news from a China standpoint, though, is that from the most recent data that we're seeing come in, there does seem like it's a bit of a cyclical upturn. It's nothing to rave on about, but something at least to lift at least expectations. If that is carried through, then certainly for a lot of those other those bigger multinational tech companies which have got so much exposure to China, it does suggest that they are a little bit less at risk than we would have considered. But certainly the geopolitics is something that we always have to watch. But it's not yet at that point where it's changing our perspective on positivity about the sector.
I like that we go global, because look, it's not just US stocks have done particularly well of late. Japanese stocks on a tear. European stocks, it's 100 been at a record as well. Where are you liking other geographies right now?
Yeah, and it's a great question, because at the moment, I mean, at least for the last couple of weeks, what we've been challenged with in the market is that although I think a lot of people continue to believe in US exceptionalism, they have been confounded by the fact that the rate cut debate continues. We're not very sure about where that's going. When you think about the growth story, you suddenly see economic downside surprises in the US. And then, of course, there's evaluations. So then this is probably a good time to start thinking outside of the US. And there are some good stories. So even you think about Europe, which is the perennial disappointment, but now you're seeing that we know what the ECB is going to do. We have, I think, pretty much good confidence that there's going to be cuts in June and then thereafter. We know that we're starting to see a cyclical economic upside surprise, not an acceleration, but at least we're seeing some good news come through, and then valuations more attractive. So if you look across Europe, that's fairly good news. And even in China, as I said, given where sentiment was, you couldn't get much worse than that. And now with the economic data seeing some signs of brightness, that is looking like a more attractive part of the market too.
Seema, you're a regular on Bloomberg Television. You're a regular here on Bloomberg Technology. Away from the markets, I wanted to ask you about how you're using AI at work or at home. You know, we're going to be talking later about AI-driven search. What have you been up to in the world of AI?
Well, look, I mean, I think any company out there has to be embracing AI and trying to figure out where they can use it in any parts of work and home. So from a work perspective, of course, trying to adopt AI into our models, trying to analyze the companies from a single sector, single stock perspective, that is going to be the easiest way to try and do full analysis and get a full, complete level of information. So that is something that we're trying to bring into work. I have small children. AI is the stuff that they talk about at school as well. So you can see that this is everywhere. It's not just dominated by the finance news.
Principal Asset Management Chief Global Strategist Seema Shah. AI everything all the time and markets. What more can you ask for on Bloomberg Technology? Coming up on the show, we're going to hear from the Cisco CFO, Scott Herren, as the company slides and its outlook is being seen as conservative. That's coming up next. Stick with us because we'll be right back. This is Bloomberg Technology.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right!
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express.
Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Got to talk Cisco, because it's been quite the volatile trade. After hours and in today's trading, we're now off by 1.7%, moving lower, well, despite the forecast actually showing a return of customer spending, of networking gear. Analysts dubbing the outlook perhaps a little conservative. Look, Bloomberg got the chance to discuss all of the results earlier with Cisco CFO Scott Herren. Take a listen.
So this was our fiscal third quarter that we announced, and normally I wouldn't guide fiscal 25 until we get to the fourth quarter earnings call. But, you know, we just acquired Splunk, so the big news for us is we acquired Splunk, we got it closed mid-quarter, and I think the analysts are all trying to adjust now to what does the combined company look like. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to do is kind of get ahead of that with fiscal 25, and without doing a fulsome guide, just get enough information out there so that they could narrow down their expectations for fiscal 25. Is it conservative? I think it's a first view of where that's going. You know, I think the encouraging thing for us is we've worked through the supply chain disruptions that we had that caused us to build up a huge backlog. And then we're able to clear, as we got the components in, we're able to clear that backlog. Revenue spiked, and now we're having to compare to those compare points. So the year-on-years are a little bit difficult to actually discern what's happening in the underlying business. We spent some time trying to unpack that for investors yesterday, and we'll do some more of that with the buy side later. So first view, but really just trying to give them enough insight so that the models would start to converge on what we think is the right set of numbers.
So it sounds like you're not saying no, but making the point that it's very early. I mean, 2025, who knows what will happen. But let's talk a little bit more about inventory. You make the point that it feels like you've turned a corner when it comes to a lot of those supply chain disruptions. And what does that say about corporate spending? A lot of people looked at this report and said, there's green shoots there. There's a bit of an uptick. If that's the case, where is that coming from? What kind of customers are we seeing that demand from?
You know, what's really interesting for us, and of course, we've got Splunk added in for just half a quarter. So if you net that out and look at what the core business on apples to apples basis looks like, actually, orders were flat overall, which is an improvement from where it's been, as customers have been really trying to implement the huge amount of product that we shipped out to them in three consecutive quarters. We see that ending. We see them getting through implementing all of the product that we shipped to them by about the end of this fiscal quarter, which for us will end at the end of July. And as that happens, we're already starting to see demand return and product orders flat. I think, encouragingly, within that overall flat, growth in security orders, growth in collaboration orders, but most importantly, growth in data center networking orders, which has been a headwind for some time, and growth in campus switching. And I think the campus switching one surprised a lot of people that we're seeing growth there with the sense that, you know, there's more vacant office space than there's ever been. How can campus switching be growing? So I think it's an encouraging sign.
So some tailwinds there. And it took me three questions, but we have to talk about AI because, of course, a detail that caught a lot of people's eyes was the fact that you have about $1 billion on AI infrastructure orders in sight. And I guess my question there is that for a particular line of business? Where would that spending actually be taking place within Cisco?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's not a new data point. We put that out there. It's in the back end. So if you think of how these AI models get trained and then get used, which is called inferencing, it's in the back end. So it's networking and optics in the back end. A lot of that going to the big, large public clouds that you'd expect in the tier two AI infrastructure build out is what drives that.
Cisco CFO Scott Herren giving, frankly, a classic class on being a CFO for a technology company. Let's get some clarity on Cisco, its technology and its earnings. And bring in Bloomberg's Ian King. There was a lot of CFO speak in that. Unpick it for us and explain the quarter that's just gone.
Yeah, I think the best way to view it is through the lens of what happened with the share price. We had an initial spike yesterday.
In after hours, right?
Exactly, yeah. In after hours trading, and today we're sort of down moderately, a little bit more sober. What really happened, and Scott kind of alluded to that, was the expectation for orders was that they would be down possibly as much as 10%, maybe even more in the quarter that they just reported. Came in as kind of okay, maybe up slightly when you include this new acquisition. So there was like, things aren't as bad as we had feared kind of reaction that happened in the after hours. Then when we go through the numbers and listen to the call. We've seen a reaction this morning, which is more like, yeah, okay, it's okay, but bearing in mind they've just done this massive acquisition, maybe they're not getting quite the kick from that.
Yeah, I mean, we have to take Splunk into consideration here, and there's going to be new role of president, for example, Ian. But what about some of the other partnerships, not actual M&A, but, you know, they had this big fanfare of an NVIDIA deal and partnership. Has that bringing in any much-needed revenue streams?
Well, that is still in the early days, so we don't really know. But, you know, back to the conversation that was had with Scott and the big question of this $1 billion of AI-related orders, obviously Cisco wants to go to the party too. At the moment, though, and there were a lot of questions on the call yesterday, well, what exactly do you mean by $1 billion? Who's giving you these orders? How sure are you that these are real orders and not just an aspirational goal? And there was a lot of to and fro with the leadership team about, you know, what that really means and whether this is real. And really, the bottom line is that investors aren't quite yet ready to let Cisco into that AI party.
Ian, you broke a story literally as we started the show and before you walked on set about Ampere, the chip company, teaming up with Qualcomm to make AI technology, AI infrastructure. I didn't know that Qualcomm was in that line of business. I do now. Give us the details.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on there is Ampere, who we had at our tech conference last year, they're an ARM server chip company trying to get into all of the big hyperscalers. They're teaming up with Qualcomm to bring in this accelerator to try to basically bring a cheaper alternative to the kind of thing that NVIDIA is selling for many tens of thousands of dollars. We'll see how well that goes. We'll see how well that performs.
I mean, we sat with Renee James, both you and I, individually at various points throughout that event last week, Ian, and she's a breath of fresh air in many ways to the area of computing and the startup side of things. But it looks like there's kind of a trifecta going on. They can't just do it alone. They've got to be working where there's Supermicro's involved, Supermicrocomputer alongside Qualcomm, alongside Ampere. But the key refrain coming from everyone is energy, right? Efficiency here.
Yeah, as you point out, Rene is pretty fired up about this, and she's making a point which many agree, which is we cannot carry on like this. The cost of AI in terms of power, in terms of money, is just too great right now. We need technology answers to that problem. We need more efficient chips. We need cheaper chips. And she's trying to offer that her company as a solution to that problem.
Well, certainly managing to come out to the market with a combination offering at the moment. Ian, it's brilliant that you got to break it for us. Thank you, Bloomberg's Ian King.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights. Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Time now for Talking Tech. First up, Microsoft is said to have asked hundreds of its China-based AI staff to consider relocating. That's all according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, the tech giant has asked its employees based in China to move to a different country, perhaps US, but Ireland, Australia, New Zealand. It's all amid growing tensions between the US and China on technology. Those who choose not to transfer could remain working in the country for now. Plus, Michael Burry's investment firm is doubling down on its Chinese investments. JD.com, Alibaba. Now, according to 13F filings, JD was the firm's top holding after boosting its stake by 80%, with Alibaba coming in second. Now, Burry has been making a return to the Chinese tech sector after exiting them at one point in 2023. And revenue for Baidu grew at actually its slowest pace in more than a year. China's internet search leader, look, it's struggling to turn its investments into generative AI into actually real revenue, real earnings. They came in at $4.4 billion for the 3 months ending in March. Meanwhile, JD.com reported, well, a better than expected 7% rise in revenue. This after the Beijing-based retailer actually cut prices, ramped up customer perks to counter some of that competition. JD.com's results are seen as one of the key bellwethers of Chinese consumption, which, look, have struggled to recover since the country lifted COVID curbs. Ed.
Yeah, there's going to be a big global e-commerce theme in today's show because Walmart's also out with its results this morning that showed a 22% jump year over year in its online business. This is e-commerce growth principally in the US. Let's get out to Bloomberg's Jaewon Kang, who covers Walmart for us. And that's the story, but what's behind it? What's Walmart been doing with its digital presence?
Yeah, so e-commerce has been a really important business for Walmart. It's, you know, definitely one of the factors of growth. And what they've been doing is, you know, really adding capabilities like delivering orders super early in the morning. They're also working to deliver their items faster. So, you know, same day, in a couple of hours. They're also improving what the company calls a perfect order, which refers to different metrics like, when orders arrive or how complete the orders are. And they've been working on, improving all of those things while cutting down costs associated with delivery.
The numbers are phenomenal. And when you're looking at 4 billion items in the last 12 months delivered by in same day or next day, that's comparable to Amazon. What's also comparable to Amazon is some of the teething problems that they had back in the day when they started having third-party sellers. Look, I was just sat down in makeup, and makeup artist saying, look, have you seen that there's like some fake handbags being sold on Walmart now? I had an issue with my son's gift arriving during Christmas because, look, it was from a third-party vendor, and that vendor didn't seem to live up to the expectations. What's going on in terms of teething issues?
So Marketplace has also been one of the factors of growth for Walmart, and it's been trying to, you know, add sellers and increase the number of items that it sells on Marketplace in the U.S. and abroad. And a huge benefit of that business is the fact that, you know, the company can really grow the range of items that it sells online, and they, you know, see a lot of opportunities with general merchandise in particular. So, this morning they talked about items like pets and beauty. They're, you know, going up in sales by more than 30% on Marketplace. At the same time, it is a more nascent business compared to selling items in stores. And so, we'll see the different puts and takes that they'll, test out with that business.
For now, earnings looking very strong. Thank you so much, Jaewon Kang, on all things Walmart.
So how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right.
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4x points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4x points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Caroline Hyde in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco.
But for now, there's news from Perplexity, the developer of an AI-based search engine platform. It's creating a brand new advisory board that will include Mikhail Perakin, the former head of Microsoft's Bing Search, of course, Rich Miner, Google advisor, Android co-founder, and Emil Michael, former chief business officer over at Uber. Here for more on this news is Perplexity CEO, Aravind Srinivas. So we have this new set of advisors. I'm going to start with the obvious, having just looked at the pictures. You're 4 male co-founders, and you've got 3 men on your advisory board. You are a man of color. I don't need you to preach to the converted. Where is the women? Where's the diversity?
So one of our board directors, Kat Wilhelm from IBP, she's a woman. We also have another board observer, Ann Bordetsky from NEA, who's also a woman. And Susan Wojcicki, former YouTube CEO, is an investor in us, and she's also very helpful in advice. So we have a lot of people from many different diverse backgrounds helping us right now.
Okay, so one female board member, one observer, one investor that you name. That doesn't feel like a lot, but I get it. You feel that there's diversity enough. Many would quibble with that. But let's talk about what these three people bring from a, or across the board, across experience. What is it that you need right now in terms of advice?
Yeah, so as a startup, we've been fortunate to scale up so much in such a short period of time. The next step for us is to really think hard about strategy, both in terms of search, how to build our own index, and how to like scale it up to like even more users, and in terms of how our mobile and distribution strategy evolves, right? So search is all about distribution. They all say Sundar Pichai is the CEO of Google because he really cracked the distribution code through Chrome. So we are working with Emil, who is a former business officer of Uber, who is so aggressive on growth in terms of getting such a large user base. So we need to think, have similar ideas here. And in terms of mobile
strategy. Some would say it was too aggressive.
Yeah, like we'll try to tone it down, sure. But look, startups have to be aggressive in terms of competing against incumbents who already have like billion users, or OpenAI has 100 million users. We don't have that today. So we have to be, it's on us to do that. And it requires a good mobile strategy too, a great mobile experience. So Rich from Android would be very helpful there. And of course, the core thing is search, and no one better than Mikhail, who used to head Bing. He rolled out Bing Chat Copilot and was previously doing all the search infrastructure for Yandex. So he's going to advise us on building a lot of in-house infrastructure for us.
Aravind, thanks for coming back on the program. I've got to ask you about Google I.O. And the real emphasis, frankly, that Google put on integration of AI into search. Specifically, it's like this idea of AI overviews, right? You know, you search for something, it gives you a text answer as opposed to links. A lot of people want to know, what is Aravind Srinivas's reaction to what you saw out of Google I.O.?
As the same reaction to what I saw last year when they called it Search Generative Experience. It's just the exact same thing called as a different name. There's literally no change to it. And sure, it's being rolled out to more people, but it's not going to be rolled out for every single query you type on Google. And the most important thing when someone uses a product is they should know what's going to happen. When people go to Google, they hate the latency being bad. They expect instant 10-blue links to render. So the moment you start like making people wonder what's going to happen, whether that's going to be a streaming of tokens for an answer, or is this going to be links, or whether it's going to be ads, or whether it's going to be some other panels, and a UI that's so cluttered with all these elements at one place versus a single UI just focused for question answering, that's what like users are going to decide between Perplexity and Google AI Overviews. And I think like users like simple, minimal, clean products, so we are pretty confident in our own direction.
Aravind, do you have any information or even just sense that this was Google responding directly to Perplexity?
Possible.
Possible, right? And how do you plan to respond yourself?
By being a better product, by actually working on categories of searches that they're definitely going to be not incentivized to. For example, shopping. If you still, like I'm on the SGE experiment already. And when I still type in shoes, I don't get any of the AI overviews. I just get all the Google Shopping cluttered UI. So I still get ads. So there are like query categories, commercially intended query categories, insurance, travel, shopping, or like education, the universities, for different tuition programs, taxes, all these different categories where all these advertisers are screaming at you to click on them. There's just no incentive to like for them to put an AI overview for those queries and like lose their revenue share.
What's interesting though is you actually are built, in some ways you use Claude 3, you also use OpenAI's underlying large language model, and there's rumors that OpenAI are going to come out with some sort of search.
Right.
Would that worry you a little bit more?
Not really. Though their strategy is cleaner than what Google is doing, they're not actually just changing ChatGPT to put in search. They're building out a separate product. But by building out a separate product, you're competing for users from, you know, in the same way as like Google rolling out Gemini or Bard. You're not actually taking advantage of the existing user base. And we are confident that like our existing work on using many models and many indexes and all the orchestration that we do will still keep us a superior product. But it's good competition. Like we're definitely going to watch what they're going to release and make sure we execute even faster than what we're doing.
It's competition for talent. It's competition for dollars, because this is not a cheap process to be answering all our questions. Are you fundraising again? There's rumors that you are.
Are there rumors? I mean, I don't know. Like, look, all I'll say is that we are trying to be as efficient as possible and not going and raising like a $1 billion round or something like that. I would say, yes, I agree with you. This is going to be expensive. We would have to fundraise again at some point. But our goal is to get our revenue in good shape so that as we scale in terms of number of people, that's a good revenue per employee, and we're a healthy business too.
Aravind, welcome to Bloomberg Technology. I'm glad that you're in the studio with us today. When we say that you're coming on the show, we get a lot of questions from the audience. Unsurprisingly, there are many Perplexity users out there, right? What always strikes me is how simple the questions are. They just want to know from you what your daily active user metrics are, the latest on the user base, geographically where these people are.
Yeah, so we actually care more about the number of queries we get every single day. That's a better metric for us because that's more directly tied to expanding our index and getting our models in better shape. So we are pretty close to 10 million daily queries at this point, somewhere in the late single digits of millions. So that's actually a really good progress from where we started. So every single month, we are basically serving close to like 190 million queries. And this is only expanding. We started like 1.5 years ago. Looking forward, like we can definitely, for example, Bing Chat served like a billion queries in 2023, and we served 500 million. This year itself, we've already surpassed the entirety of 2023 in the first 3 months or 4 months. So looking forward, if we keep sustaining these growth rates, we are headed for a great future.
Aravind, I wrote on Monday in the Tech Daily that consolidation's coming. Among AI startups, essentially. Have you held talks with a bigger technology company about the potential of being acquired, or do you see yourselves as an acquirer of some of the other smaller names or teams that are out there?
Yeah, so I agree with you on the broader point of consolidation. It's already happening. Like a lot of AI startups that used to be there are no longer there, and like the fewer ones that exist continue to keep getting more and more powerful in terms of user base or market share and APIs. So we've had interest in the past, I'm not going to deny that. And we've also looked into acquiring a few smaller startups. In fact, we've made one active hire already, like a company called Spellwise, which helped revamp our mobile team. And we were always looking for like new hungry founders who are like, you know, even earlier stage than we are. Faster at executing than like typical engineers from big tech, and we're always excited about like talking to more people like that.
Aravind Srinivasa, Perplexity CEO, thank you for coming back on the show at Bloomberg Technology and joining us out of the New York studio. Appreciate it. Sticking with AI, the Senate's bipartisan AI working group, which is led by Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, finally released its highly anticipated roadmap yesterday to provide guidance on congressional efforts to harness AI's benefits but mitigate potential risks. The blueprint recommends $32 billion in annual government spending to support non-defense AI research and development efforts, in part to stay ahead of rivals like China. Caroline.
Long time coming, a fair bit of criticism from some lobbyists over there. But now we're going to take the conversation forward and actually maybe divert into the world of Web3 for a moment. Sergey Nazarov's going to be with us, co-founder of Chainlink, to discuss the trend in asset tokenization from New York, where we're also looking at Meta shares, talking of all things social media. Look, currently under pressure just by 1.4% on the day. Interesting risk-off tone given that the rest of the market is pushing higher. Look, Meta being suspected by the EU of hooking kids on Facebook and Instagram. Look, this is yet another investigation, this time coming under the Digital Services Act, that could lead to some fines. From New York for San Francisco, this is Bloomberg Technology.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right!
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Let's talk crypto and asset tokenization with Chainlink, a company that connects blockchains and brings real-world data on-chain, and which now works with the likes of BNP, Bank of America, and Citibank. And just in the last few moments, has had some pretty significant breaking news. Sergey Nazarov is the co-founder of Chainlink and joins us now. Let's start with that news. DTCC, you have a new arrangement with them, a new relationship. Explain it to us.
Yeah, sure. So we've been working with them for some time now on how to create high quality on-chain digital assets that are driven by data. And so the report that's just come out today shows how data can flow into assets on-chain and prove critical things about the assets on an ongoing basis, which is very different from how the current financial system works, where the ownership of an asset doesn't give you access to data. That becomes your responsibility. So the DTCC report was around something called SmartNav, where Chainlink was used to put critical pieces of data on chain around funds, tokenized funds. And the collaboration included big firms like JP Morgan, Franklin Templeton, BNY Mellon, State Street, and others were part of the pilot with them. And I think what this shows is that real-world asset tokenization is taking a more mainstream institutional interest level, especially the real-world assets that are backed by data. Because the big difference here is that the asset can have critical information about it continually updated. And the holder of the asset or the buyer of the asset doesn't have to search for that data, and they don't need to have any special expertise. And also the data can move across chains. That was the other big part of the collaboration, is how does the data and the asset end up moving across chains. But this is just some of our initial work together, and I'm hopeful there will be more with them and other large CSDs.
It's interesting, of course, because there are many vocal critics of some of the actual coins and investment opportunities when it comes to crypto, but they've always all together now said, but we like the underlying technology. We like blockchain. CEO Jamie Dimon, for example, of JP Morgan. How does this disintermediate longer term financial institutions?
I think financial institutions have a fundamental role to play in terms of compliance and in terms of allowing users to use digital asset products in a compliant way, in relation to their identity, in relation to ways that regulators and CSDs and central banks find acceptable. So I don't think banks are going away. I don't think things like the DTCC are going away. I don't think central banks are going away. I think they're going to use the technology. I think they'll actually be the biggest net users of blockchain technology, and they're going to generate the most assets. They're going to generate the most payments. And importantly, they're going to do it in a way that complies with legal requirements. Mm. We're kind of at a place in the crypto industry where if you're at $2.5 trillion, maybe you can go to as high as $10 trillion off of hedge funds and prop traders and the retail community. But in my opinion, if you want to go to the hundreds of trillions that will be in the blockchain format, you need the global CSDs, the central banks, the big commercial banks to basically adopt the technology for its value. Yeah. And that's what this collaboration with the DTCC has been about, is providing that technical value in ways that benefits both the traditional financial system and consumers and the Web3 blockchain community.
This is about, you say, accelerating the investment fund tokenization movement. Which particular real-world assets are we ultimately going to see being put forward on the blockchain first? It's already being done, already being experimented with. But for the audience out there who also happen to be trading equities or in a commodity space, maybe they're a bond syndicate desk, where are they going to see their assets hit first?
So it's actually going to vary by institution and what institutions are good at tokenizing or good at turning into securities. There are basically two categories. There are the core financial products of the current financial system, treasuries, money market funds, bonds. These are being tokenized by bigger institutions, and the benefits of tokenizing them are around collateral management, and they're around diversifying your on-chain holdings so that you're not just holding cryptocurrencies on-chain, you're holding treasuries on-chain. Then you have what are called assets at the edges. These are assets that have traditionally not been tokenized. So these are assets like carbon credits, real estate, private equity. Mm-hmm. These are the assets that have not been securitized that are now being securitized in the form of a tokenized product. These are the things that people have more press releases about, they hear more about, because they're a more exciting kind of net new product. And I think that there is tens of trillions of dollars in value just in the net new product category. But I am actually seeing both of them happening at the same time. I'm seeing the tokenization of treasuries and money markets and more foundational financial products and very foundational parts of the financial system. And then I'm also seeing the more advanced kind of securitization 2.0 wave of tokenized products. The ones that come to mind are private equity, right, real estate, and carbon credits.
Sergey Nazarov, co-founder of Chainlink. Great to have you on the show. Thank you.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right.
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
So ServiceNow is beefing up. It's increasing its workforce. It's expanding in enterprise software. How? Pretty simple. They're hiring from a larger competitor, Salesforce. Bloomberg's Brody Ford is here with a very well-read story today because everyone loves to hear about people pinching people from other places. And this is what's going on.
We all love a rivalry. The tech industry loves a rivalry, and we're seeing one here. ServiceNow is a very fast-growing software company. While a lot of other software companies have seen this real, almost depressive environment, they've managed to keep growing quick. They're expanding into new product categories. Where does that leave them? Edging up into Salesforce, right? And so what do? You poach a couple hundred people. And that's what we're seeing here, right? They have hired pretty aggressively from Salesforce. Their CEO's taken some pot shots at them. I mean, they even stopped using Slack once Slack got bought by Salesforce. So we have kind of one of these fun little rivalries bubbling up here, you know?
Emily Chang is going to be speaking to Benioff later today. I'm speaking to Bill McDermott on Monday.
Yeah.
I wonder if it comes up. put that aside for a second. Competition is not new in this place, this town. Yep. Is it salaries? Is it stock? How are they doing it?
Yeah, I would say part of it is that there's been disruption at Salesforce, right? I mean, they had the big layoffs a little over a year ago. A lot of it I hear is that salespeople got laid off over there. ServiceNow said, hey, we actually need more salespeople with your kind of experience, so come on over. But it's been at the executive level too, right? I mean, ServiceNow's new chief marketing officer came from Salesforce. So I imagine there are some pretty aggressive offers happening here. And it's really across the board. So it's interesting to see what this kind of new infusion of talent does for them. I mean, they've grown their headcount maybe 3,000 over the last year, which most companies have cut by that amount. So it'll be interesting to see how that impacts them.
I love that Bill Patterson is giving you the quote of basically that imitation is the best form of flattery. So it's quite flattering, honestly, that they happen to aspire to be more like us.
The larger company doesn't usually want to engage with this kind of thing because then it validates it, right? So yeah, they kind of they kind of poo-pooed the competition.
Oh, well, we'll see how they handle some of the questions from Emily and from our own Ed a little bit later. Brodie Ford, always great writing, great explaining. We love having you on. Meanwhile, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology, Ed.
What an edition of Bloomberg Technology it was. Check out the pod. Lots of chat about the pod all the time. You know exactly where to find it. One day left in this fantastic week. Keep with us. From San Francisco and New York, this is Bloomberg Technology.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.